Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. The third night of the Democrat National Convention is over. We have instant analysis with Benny Johnson here, who I work on a lot of different things with at Turning Point USA. This conversation was out on our personal time. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Thank you for supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. We are having the best week we've ever had in the history of our podcast this week, because we are up to 1, 2, 3 in the morning producing content just for you with instant analysis of exactly what happened. So we watched the Democrat convention so you didn't have to. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Benny Johnson is here. Instant analysis to all the Democrat National Convention nonsense. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another live stream here on the Charlie Kirk Show. I'm here with my friend Benny Johnson. Benny, say hello.
Hey, everyone. How are you doing?
I am in an undisclosed location at the imminent apocalypse.
I was about to say, are you on the inside of a container ship traveling towards?
Let's just say this. If the world ends, I will be very safe.
So good. Okay. Yeah. Good. All right. Fantastic. It looks like you're in a police lineup.
Something like that. Yes.
So is this the coronavirus bunker for the Kirk household?
It could be one of those things. But Benny, congratulations on a new child into the world.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much.
So as you look at this Democrat circus, and we decided to get started early. We could have waited for what's the pronunciation, Benny? Is it Kamala? Kamala?
Yeah, you better say it right. Okay. You better say this name that people aren't used to pronouncing correct. Otherwise, racism. That's what's going to happen to you, Mr. Kirk. Okay. You traveling in your container ship to Europe to find out where the start of the European virus happened. Did you hear that yesterday? Cuomo calling it the European virus?
I did.
What? What universe do we live in? What is this live stream? Is this a live stream from like some other alternate universe? What is this? Because I'm watching the same thing you're watching. None of this makes sense. Kamala just said that there's no cure for racism, right? There's no vaccine for racism. Well, that sucks for her running mate, Joe Biden, hardest hit. Okay, so she's going to have to explain to him,
well,
you know.
And she also says, I know
kids are just as good as white kids.
She says, I know a predator when I see one. I said, you're running with one. I mean, that's not exactly a novel breakthrough.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Yes, we have the footage. By the way, if you want to know a predator, last night Bill Clinton spoke. What did Bill Clinton do immediately after leaving the presidency is go and hang out with his friend Jeffrey Epstein for years. And got massages in airports and on his private plane. It's not a conspiracy theory. There are photos. Not that the establishment media would ever show you those. But
so did you watch the convention tonight?
I did. It was like, for me, my major takeaway is this: why would you? And I think I'm paraphrasing you here. Why would you want to lead a country you hate? I've never heard more people talk down on America. This has been the most depressing 3 days of anything I've ever heard. I mean, well, it's legitimately depressing. Why would you want to be a part of this country? Like, this is these people like clearly hate America and don't think we're a great place to live, and the world would be better off without America.
I mean, I say this with, you know, no kidding at all. I mean, they are, if you just watch the Democrat Party and their convention, there's no way you can walk away from that being grateful that you live in the United States. You are going to think that we have nothing but issues and problems, nothing but just systemic injustice everywhere you turn around. And I don't know if Senator Harris is still talking or not. We decided just to cut right in because I just can't handle the nonsense. I just can't. There, I mean, out of all the politicians that I can't listen to, it's Senator Harris right at the top of the list. I mean, just she does this thing where she points with her thumb. Have you noticed how all the Democrats kind of do that? They kind of do this kind of where they want to kind of do the dictator pointing, but they don't. They just kind of do the little thumb gesture. And as soon as she said the thing, well, there is no virus, no virus for racism or no vaccine for racism or something, I said, that's it. We're done. I said, we're going straight live.
We would have been on time, except for there was a 5-minute pause where nothing happened on stage when they threw to Kamala. They threw to I have to catch myself in case someone
I
is,
still,
you know,
I,
someone's going to
I still
clip
don't
it.
Know how to.
How do you pronounce it?
I don't know. You can mispronounce Benny if you want. I'm not going to call you racist. Bonnie. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. Like, honestly, this entire that clip was hysterical, but not as hysterical as watching the DNC convention. I mean, this is one of the most poorly produced. This is one of the most poorly produced live television events I've ever seen. I mean, I've been watching sort of on and off. Obviously, I have a newborn. I'm like paying attention to my baby and paying attention to my wife. I'm doing all multiple other projects. Charlie, you and I are very, very busy on a lot of projects trying to save the country, right? So there's a lot of work to be done. But as I'm tuning in for 5 minutes at a time, it's like a couple things here. First, right off the top, there's this thing that happens when you're when you can't read a teleprompter. And it's so irritating when you like watch the people's eyes go back and forth and even their heads sometimes go like this. And it just seems so staged and just so macabre. And it's just what happens when you're not a pro. And none of these people are pros. I've never seen like a more teleprompter scripted thing. You can watch everyone's eyeballs going back and forth. Secondly, none of these people are hitting their cues. They went to Hillary Clinton tonight and she just sat there and glared at the camera with dark, like punk rock singer eyeshadow and just glared at the camera like Ozzy Osbourne for like 3 straight minutes. And you could just like hear, it's just like, this is absolutely like.
Well, I think that the crowning achievement of the evening was Nancy Pelosi's jaw made it through the live stream. I think that was. It was so close. It was close towards the end. I want everyone to know how much I hate Donald Trump, and I just really want to vote how much I really hate him, and he's just the worst person I've ever seen. And if anyone understands how much I hate him, it's like the amount of stress that was happening at once. It was just, I think she had a platoon of people that were like, thank goodness that one survived. Oh my goodness.
Here's my impression of them cutting to Hillary. Mr. Epstein. It's so, I'm so glad you can join me this evening. Oh, that's not us? That's not this time? Horrifying.
My goodness.
Horrifying. Kamala had 5 minutes, Charlie. I timed it. Our team timed it. You're on the same chats I am. Our team timed it. 5 minutes of just blank space where she didn't come on. Her video didn't play. The camera just showed an empty stage.
And so there's a huge focus on climate change tonight, huge focus on gun violence, which I think is a losing issue for them. I mean, if you look at the amount of new gun registrations, we already have more gun registrations so far this year than all of last year combined. It's a huge issue for young voters and young women voters in particular. There was a huge emphasis on kind of this female uprising. I don't know if you noticed that or not. They had a huge kind of infomercial on how, you know, the Democrat Party is the party of women, which is really perplexing. And Benny, can you walk me through this one? If genders don't matter, and if men and women are just transact, like you change genders, gender fluidity, why is it they have such a heavy focus on women's rights?
I've long said that for a single day, for 24 hours, Donald Trump must identify as a woman. And he must identify as the woman. He must say he's going to make a huge announcement, and he's going to go a huge announcement tomorrow on the red carpet. He just says, I am a woman. And then not only does he say he's the first woman president, he should just do this, by the way, in October, 24 hours. He says, I'm a woman, dares all of them to go against the canon of the Democratic Party right now. And then secondly, he becomes the first same-sex couple in the White House with Melania. Because then it's, you know, it's Melania and it's woman Donald Trump. It's easy. What I'm saying, Charlie, is you're exactly right. And if they're going to play by these rules, which are insane, then you got to play by the rule that you can just decide to become a woman. And so I think the president should just play to that.
So, but you know, just you and I are Trump supporters. Looking at this objectively, do you think that Democrats have won any voters over in the last 3 days? I mean, do you think there's someone today that on Sunday was kind of like, you know what, I'm on the fence. I'm going to watch a Democrat convention. And then maybe after they saw Gretchen Whitmer screaming, they're like, that's exactly why I need to go vote Democrat. I mean, was there anything you think that was that convincing these last couple of days? I don't think it's been a very persuasive convention at all. I think it's been unconvincing and contradictory. Look, I'm going to give the Democrats credit where credit's due. The entire staging and the framing and the idea of the Barack Obama speech was very smart, I have to say. Whoever came up with the idea of having him in Philadelphia, of him embracing the symbolism of America, him embracing the Constitution, him not saying negative things about our country, him almost having like a healing approach. It's if only he was president for 8 years. I mean, if only that guy would have been running our country for 8 years. I mean, then he actually would have an opportunity to have done something. But I think that was probably the best moment of the entire convention. But then Kamala or Senator Harris, let's just call her that way. Senator Harris, I think, completely fell flat. I mean, I think she reminds me a lot of Hillary Clinton. Do you think there's anyone that's been persuaded by this?
Have you ever seen those like anti-depression commercials about for like the pill that you take when you're on depression? And there's like two things that happen in the ad. There's the like before the pill, the anti-depression pill, where like you're sad and like there's no butterflies and you're just miserable and you're walking around and the whole world sits as a weight on your shoulders and you just can't get out of bed in the morning. I think if you're like that kind of a person, then this convention appeals to you because you're the person and you're the in the before photo, right? In the anti-depression ad. You're the person who is just miserable. You hate America. You don't actually like this country. You think this country's terrible. You think people are getting just like slaughtered and racism and everyone's being held back and you are a victim. And the only way is to punch out of your victimhood, is to fight the powers. And you don't realize that you're living in the freest, most prosperous, most equitable country known to man. Because you're not actually grateful about that. And Kaepernick and all this nonsense. I think those are the people that are convinced. Those are the people. If you have a modicum of like, I don't know, positivity in your life and you just generally want to be left alone and you think things were going pretty damn well before the European virus, as they call it, which again is just insane. I just can't get over that. Then it's not a problem. You brought up Obama, and I think this is fascinating, Charlie. You brought up Obama. Our president is going to be speaking from the White House for his speech. Am I wrong?
I believe that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So our president is speaking from the White House. They freak out because they're saying like he's speaking from government property, right? He's speaking from a government, wholly owned government property. I looked up where Obama was tonight. That's a government property. It's a national park. And so does it apply? I looked on Twitter. There was no one losing their minds that the president was speaking from what is a national historic landmark there in Philadelphia. So where's the double standard? They are literally the same in the sense that they're both owned and operated properties from the government, operated by the government.
Yeah. And if I were to kind of look at the theme of the entire last couple of days, especially this convention or whatever this was, a Zoom call, pre-rehearsed ad cut after ad cut. I mean, they cherry pick some of the saddest stories. And I'm not going to deny they're not sad stories. I mean, I'm not going to say that. But it was so incredibly heavy on the emotion, right? It was so heavy on the emotive that there is very little that they could say, actually, about critiquing President Trump's legislative accomplishments, right? Very little about the foreign policy landscape, almost no mention of China at all whatsoever. There was kind of like a little jab here and there, like, oh, we're going to be the ones that bring back jobs. Like, that's not going to, no one believes that, right? And it's becoming more and more clear that from like the Democrat strategy box, like if you will, like the box, like to use a football analogy, kind of like up in the box when they're looking down on like what's happening on the field. The Democrats are really, really worried that if they actually get in a discussion about achievements of prior Democrat presidents and President Trump, it's not going to go that well. You know, it's been really interesting, Benny. What are some of the things you've been, what's one of the big glaring things that has been missing from these last 3 days? Like the one thing that I have not heard mentioned, no image. I know that's kind of a trick question because it's open-ended, but anything come to mind? Because I have something that really is interesting, especially on the Senator Harris night.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. You and I think very similarly. I know exactly what it is. Tell me if I'm right. here we go, that Obama put kids in cages. Is
no,
that
it's
it?
Not, but that's close.
Because that's actually what happened. I heard that many times tonight. That is an Obama rule and legislation. Joe Biden and Barack Obama put children in cages at our border.
Well, that is true. But think about that's true. But so it's Senator Harris's night. So maybe I'm gonna try to make you cheat here, Benny. Let's see if you can win trivia. Senator Harris's night. What's the thing that really put her on the map in the last 18 months?
Running for president as a black female.
There was a Senate hearing.
Oh, Kavanaugh. Yeah.
Do you notice how Kavanaugh wasn't mentioned at all these last 3 days? It's very interesting. This was a huge fundraising tool for them. This was something that fired up their base. Why is it, Benny? It's because Republicans fought so hard. Brett Kavanaugh's more popular than he was than before the Senate confirmation hearing. That it actually was a losing issue, right? They didn't mention Gorsuch. They didn't mention the 200 circuit court judges. They didn't mention anything about the embassy in Jerusalem. It's like they don't really want to play on the terrain of the successful movement towards kind of normalcy in the country, right? And their entire theme is they're actually trying to paint Donald Trump not as the guardian of Western civilization or the guardian of decency and like civil society, right? That they're actually trying to be the opposite. They're like, oh, we Democrats are actually the conservatives. Now, mind you, the BLM stuff contradicts that, but they're almost trying to run as the small C conservatives. And hear me out for a second, Benny. They're the ones that are trying to tell people if it's chaotic, it's chaotic because of them, not because of us. So give us more power. See, look at all these beautiful flags behind me. And I have like the Constitution kind of in the upper right hand corner, the document that President Obama, he might have read once or twice, but I don't think he ever adhered by it. It's very interesting because it's so Orwellian. It's the exact opposite when it's actually their entire party that has been manufacturing the riots, has been inciting the terrorism, has been encouraging the arson. And the fact they have not mentioned Brett Kavanaugh once, and this is a party that said we have to impeach Brett Kavanaugh. I mean, this is a Supreme Court seat that was supposed to be their big fight, right? I didn't see anything about it. And that goes to show that's a fight they lost. That's a fight they put everything they could in. We won. They lost. And it's partly because we actually said this is a line that we're not going to allow the left to cross. It's the number one teaching moment when I tell, you know, talk to Republicans. I'm like, this is the one time we actually got tougher than the Democrats. And look what we got from it. What do you think about that, Benny? Is there some wisdom there? And what do you think has been missing so much that you were expecting from this convention?
Well, yeah. That's absolutely correct. They can't run on Kavanaugh. And one of the most vicious, vile, awful questioners of Kavanaugh was Kamala Harris. Raised just egregious conspiracy theories about him. Essentially, assumed that every single allegation against him was 100% true, regardless of them being in the extra level absurd. And then also, by the way, Joe Biden's accusers, they have by judicial standards miles more of credible witnesses for these accusations. Tara Reid is who I'm specifically talking about. There are a half dozen people who corroborate this story. And Kamala, I think weirdly, right, I will agree with her on this, said, yeah, I believe the accusers of Joe Biden. And now look at her. There's not a single person. I mean, there's not a single person like actually pushing back on that and the fact that she called Joe Biden a racist. She did it in front of all of us. She said it to his face on a national debate stage. You're a racist. I wouldn't have gone to school. If you were president, you got your way, I wouldn't have been able to go to school. That's what she said. And then she said she believes his accusers.
And so that little girl was me. So let's just do a Senator Harris kind of takedown right now. I think that's really important to do. So first of all, she was rated by an independent study last year as the most liberal senator in the entire United States Senate. She's also a power hungry politician, one of the most we've ever seen. Benny, I'll let you tell the Willie Brown angle of this. But I mean, she definitely used, let's say, questionable moral behavior to move up in her career. In just a second, I want you to kind of explain on that. Senator Harris also put, and this is something that I think is to be debated whether it was the right thing or not, but it's definitely unpopular in Democrat circles. She put records amount of criminals in jail in California. And some people thought it was unfair towards black and brown communities. I'm not going to comment on that. I mean, I am going to say, though, that it's not exactly consistent with where the tone and the base of the Democrat Party is at all. She went after an innocent man, Brett Kavanaugh, and decided she just wanted to destroy his life because she wanted to get more small dollar donations. She was an unbelievably failed presidential candidate. And then back in July of last year, as you said, she was on a debate stage with Joe Biden where she said, and that little girl was me when it came to segregation and busing. And so she's nothing more than a transactional politician just trying to climb up the intervals of political power to be able to, I mean, eventually she's as close as ever to becoming vice president and president of the United States. Tell us about Willie Brown, Bill, Benny. Tell us about this story and how it gets no coverage at all from the media.
Surely there are more people who know about this story than I. I'm certainly no expert in Kamala. However, it's been written in all the papers and reported thoroughly that Willie Brown bragged and joked about how Kamala, when she was 29, I believe, and he was in his an elder statesman, let's just call him. I don't know the exact age, how she and him dated. And they dated in a capacity that, as you said, was transactional. He appointed her to multiple positions and then he became mayor of San Francisco, and this really helped out her career. And so he helped move her career along, and he is quoted in the paper.
But he was married at the time.
It's an extramarital affair, yes. He's quoted in the papers as saying, you know, that he moved her career along through this, let's just call it a sordid, torrid relationship. And this is, I mean, quite frankly, you know, should frankly be frowned upon as a way to advance yourself politically. Yes, I think most moral, decent people would say so, especially with the man who's married. So, you know, it's been written. No one's calling anyone any names. We are simply stating what is in print right now in the California papers. And he, you know, Willie Brown came back out of hiding, cause he was caught up in multiple scandals and was not kind to Kamala when she decided to run for president, was quite brutal. You know, if you want to look up those quotes, holy moly, he does not think highly of her.
You know, so I'm looking more broadly at kind of the lack of a theme for today and yesterday, and admitting that I think that the Barack Obama moment was the smartest, best crafted part of the entire convention. I am of the opinion that it's really, really hard. I look historically at this to beat an incumbent. First of all, it's just really hard to beat an incumbent, especially, you know, you look the last time an incumbent was beaten was Clinton versus H.W. Bush in 92. Before that, it was Reagan versus Carter. And both of those were surprise elections. The incumbent had a polling advantage that was significant leading up until the last couple of weeks and days of the campaign. It's very hard to beat an incumbent. But the Democrats are deciding that in order to beat the incumbent, they want to be the more boring party. They want to be more depressing. They want to be more complaining. And that people are going to show up in a lot of numbers as almost like an outrage in a referendum, right? Not trying to go vote for something. I'm of the opinion that the president and the Republican National Convention, they have a huge opportunity next week. Massive. I mean, you're talking about people. The tonal direction of the country right now is already so low that I don't think people are feeling better about themselves after this convention, right? I think they might agree with some things. Like, yeah, I agree with that. Like, now what? My life's still miserable. I actually think that the Democrats have done the Republicans such a great service because they've been complaining so much about things. And they have to do this. I'm not saying they're doing the wrong thing, because you almost have to make the people feel so awful about their country when you're trying to deter an incumbent that they won't possibly vote for the person that might correlate with that feeling. But I think they're so overdoing it that it creates almost use the weight of the enemy against them effect, right? That they, I mean, it can almost create one of the greatest like counter moves that we have seen, like mixed martial arts analogy, that the president can make people actually feel so good about their country for the first time in a long time, starting next week, and being a celebration of the American idea, the American ethos, who we are and why we're here, not having every other segment of the convention like this one be, well, we stand for environmental justice and we stand for racial justice and we stand for what other kind of justice do we stand for? And they're kind of looking around. They're like, don't we have another list of this? And it is kind of like the bitter, arrogant, deceitful party. So, Benny, what is your analysis of next week? What's the opportunity that you think this presents for Republicans as it goes into their convention week?
Yeah, so it's interesting. It really sort of goes back into this fractured. It was the Obama era that really did this, with the full embrace of a fractured America and identity politics, quite frankly, at its root. But identity politics itself is based in Marxism and cultural Marxism. And the idea that you, in order to gain control, you have to fracture off people in groups. It's very hard to control a group of people who have beliefs that they all agree on, right? Christianity, morality, the nuclear family. When 90% of the country agrees on those things, it's virtually impossible to attack it, right? You'll get crushed. And so the Democratic Party, it's an Alinsky-style tactic. It's a communist-style tactic. They decided to become what I call post-American. And the post-Americans are the ones who believe that the world would be better without America. And in order to defeat America, you have to defeat Americanism. You have to go after the ideals of this country. And this is very much where you see the BLM movement rising up and tearing asunder our Judeo-Christian faith, our values, our morals. And so you must tear asunder what is America. And then, it's very important, two-step here, you have to pit people into groups. Groups. You must group them. You must lump them. You must have the coalition of the disaffected and the victims. And that is precisely what you are seeing fully metastasized inside the Democratic Party right now. The coalition of the disaffected and the victims. The people who believe that America would work, okay, would work if they their specific group got everything that they wanted forever. That's just not how this, that's not how any country works. It's certainly not how this country works. It's how dictatorships work, but only for the people at the very teeny top. And then everyone else gets screwed or gets sent to the work camps. And so it's a very scary place where the Democratic Party is. We've seen this before. We've seen this in the Russian Revolution. We've seen this in various other dictatorships around the world throughout history. And what the Republican Party must do, long answer, but what the Republican Party must do, must more than ever, is show the difference. Show that Americanism is still a thing that you can be proud of. You must unite under these banners, these flags, these ideas. Here are a couple things that all men and women can agree upon. Can we not, in our shared past, our shared present, our shared future, our shared language, our shared belief in God, our shared belief in morality, our shared belief in equality, but equality certainly of opportunity, not of outcome. And these are the things that we can sort of come together on. And Charlie, I'll end with this. Horrifically, at the height, truly the height of the riots and the protests and this, you know, cultural rendering that they, the tear that they started about a month ago, the real rip they started about a month ago. The most sinister elements of that rip was going after places like Mount Rushmore. You remember That's it? Right. You were there with the president.
I was there, yeah.
The calls that day were to tear down Mount Rushmore. Our establishment, corporate, DNC-fused apparatchik media, the calls from within the madhouse was to now tear down our Mount Rushmore, our statues, our history. Because if you can rip those things that we all share, we all go to the Washington Monument and take a photo because it's cool and we think George Washington was a nice person. Same with Lincoln, you know, same with our other memorials. When you tear that apart, I mean, you're well on your way. You're well on your way to the cultural Marxist moment where you can fracture the society and take it over.
What I think is interesting, though, Benny, is that you're seeing a divide in the Democrat Party on how to achieve that end. Right. So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is much more impatient than Barack Obama. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is similar to Bernie Sanders, where she in 60 seconds or less, I mean, she gives like the opening shot of like Lenin's revolution, right? Like decolonization. Like everything. It's like, whoa, that you only had 60 seconds and you basically covered a swath of like half of the bad literature in the last 150 years. 60 seconds. It was impressive. It was impressive how much bitterness for the West that one person could have in 60 seconds. And yet then you have Barack Obama, who does the Alinskyite thing. And let's talk about this, right? So the Hillary Clinton wrote her senior thesis on Saul Alinsky, Rules for Radicals. We study Rules for Radicals at Turning Point. We understand them. We know the rules really well. We know how the left operates. And one of the rules is, and what it's not exactly specified in one of the rules, but one of the teachings of Saul Alinsky, who was a Chicago community organizer, wrote Rules for Radicals as the dedication to Lucifer was in the book. One of the principles, the things talked about, is never try to insult the country you're trying to take over. Like, hug the flag, say you love it, be around the history, right? Find the symbols that matter. And I think Barack Obama did a great job of that tonight. I mean, he was the ultimate Alinskyite. I mean, I would have loved to have seen Barack Obama like 5 minutes after that speech being like, I can't believe I had to say all that. I fell for all that stuff. I mean, it was so incredible how he was able to put on a kind of posture that he was the he's the guardian of American decency. I mean, I was listening very carefully to Obama's speech, especially at the beginning, and then he just kind of drones on, right? But at the beginning, I was really locked in. And he said something, I was like, that sounds something like a Republican would say, right? Where he said, our history was not perfect, but they came together and, you know, we moved past it. And then he started to get into that we're a democracy. I'm like, okay, we're a republic, okay? Very important distinction, incredibly important civic distinction that we're a constitutional republic. But Obama really, in a lot of different ways, in his speech tonight, was kind of just going to, in some ways, it was kind of a soft warning to Democrats, I think, which is like, if you keep on telling people who we really are, you're going to lose, right? I think he was trying to create an example. That's why they only gave AOC an infomercial, right? They gave AOC like an infomercial, like she was selling gold or something on like some at 2 a.m. And now, you know, from the Russian Revolution, hi guys, if you want to decolonize your country, I'm like, geez, Louise, no wonder why they only gave her 60 seconds, right? I mean, it was everything you could possibly imagine how to disassemble a functioning country. And so, and then Hillary Clinton, it was really interesting. Because I was just waiting for her to snap at some point and be like, and I'm actually president of the United States. I mean, it's really stunning.
She said it. Charlie, she said it. She said you can win the presidency and still lose because of the Electoral College. She said she won. She said she won. There's a madhouse in upstate New York where two women are in straitjackets rocking back and forth. One is the governor of Georgia. And one is the president of the United States.
And they're both celebrating.
Yes, it's Stacey Abrams and it's Hillary. And they let them out to go give speeches. And then they bring them right back in. And yes, Madam President. Yes, Madam Governor. Or whatever, you know, yes, Governor. It's insanity. I mean, it's insanity. And they have the audacity. They have the audacity to lecture conservatives, just like they did in 2016, about not accepting the results of the election. And then to make up just... I mean, this is why I think they know that they're losing, because they are starting to. I mean, they're losing. I mean, right now, this was their moment, and it didn't quite put them over the finish line. And Joe can't quite get over 46%, which is such a critical problem for him, such a horrific problem. And we all know how bad Donald Trump polls, in the sense that like there is such a silent majority that just won't talk to the pollsters, don't want to answer their questions. So the polls are always 10 points skewed in the favor of the Democrats, and Joe just can't get over 46%. But I'm reading the tea leaves and I'm saying, oh my goodness, this mailbox conspiracy theory, show me how it's not a conspiracy theory. Show me how this is not worse than Russiagate. I mean, it's really like, this is the final form of the conspiracy theorists in the party. It's insanity. Insanity what they're talking about. This, they know that they're losing, Charlie, and they're hedging. And they're saying like, okay, my God, we really can't do this. We can't get over this hump. Joe's not going to get us there. We're going to have to find something. And we won't have Russia this time. We're not going to have China or whatever, right? Because the American people are just sick of that nonsense. We have to come up with a new insane thing. And the mailboxes. They've taken the mailboxes. You heard that tonight. When they take your mailboxes. A congressional candidate chained himself to a mailbox in Oregon as a campaign ad. Chained himself to a mailbox. Pete DeFazio. Charlie, it's insane. And it's funny because they're hedging now. It's funny to watch from our perspective because it's like, oh, wow, they're getting ready to lose again. And they're trying to find something desperately. Yes.
That's right. And it's very clear, and I can kind of see it in how badly that they need a leading candidate, because all this tapestry they put up, which was really ineffective. And so you can kind of see where their thought process was, right? Like how they designed this convention, where, all right, we're going to have all these different figures. And by the way, what is with these musical numbers that really, I mean, I don't know whose idea that was. Awful, stupid, horrible. And so, but I sort of see the thought process that they thought they'd have this building moment where all Joe Biden had to do was literally just like walk across the 1-inch line. Kind of like, it was almost like you're winning by 30 points, and it's the one kid on the football team that's like been on the team the entire season and he's never played an entire down and he has no muscle mass at all. You're like, all right, we're going to put in him just one play. And then he gets to score like one touchdown. You're like, Joe Biden did it. He scored it. It's not that case at all. Now it's like Joe Biden has to perform. Like Joe Biden has to give a primetime address and speech and convince people that he has the mental capacity, the stamina, the wherewithal, the clarity. And it's, I think the Democrats in a lot of different ways, I think they're realizing how much they kind of screwed this up. And I agree that they're starting to hedge, that they're significantly starting to hedge. And so Benny, what else, what are people missing from the last couple of days? What are one of the things that you think that we need to dive into that we can pick apart heading into November from this convention that we didn't know a couple days ago?
Well, I believe that if you look at the ratings, you'll see that the enthusiasm gap that we've been hearing about with Biden is catastrophic. It's gone from like Grand Canyon to like distance of the earth to the moon. Like there is a gap. There's a huge gap. There's like a, like there's an ozone layer in the gap. There is no enthusiasm. There is none. There is no enthusiasm. We'll be in Wilmington, Delaware for some very fun things tomorrow. But
I have no idea what you're talking about.
But there's like going to, there is a gap, and we fully look forward to showing that. It's interesting if you think about it, make the case for Joe Biden without saying the name Donald Trump.
It's a great point, Benny.
Like, do it. It's fine. But you can't. And instead of, I was at the RNC in 2012, so were you, right? You were at the RNC in 2012. That was when Turning Point got started, if I'm remembering the Turning Point legacy story correctly.
That's right. We were both in Tampa, Florida, in very different places in our life.
Right. Yes, correct. And I remember watching the speeches, and sure, certainly Obama got mentioned, you know, a little bit here and there, but it really was about a Republican vision for the country. And, it, you know, Clint Eastwood brought out the chair. Remember, that was such a scandal, a scandal. Clint Eastwood, you know, and his chair. Oh, like that was it. That was it. That was the big scandal. All right. And now, you know, like it's nothing but Donald Trump. The entire convention is the anti-Trump fest. They're not for anything. And so when Trump comes in and actually hopefully crystallizes the things that we all have together as Americans and then takes that energy and then uses it as like an energy ball and just destroys Joe Biden in the debates with it, right? Like an orb in his hands, and he just pushes it like Dragon Ball Z towards Biden. He'll just evaporate. He'll just turn into, he's already the crypt keeper. He'll just like turn into dust like Yoda. It'll just poof. He'll just go away. And I don't think there's like this unifying moment that people want out of a convention where you like have all this energy going into the debates, because the debates is obviously where you win or lose. The conventions are not where you win or lose. The conventions are when people go, oh, that's interesting. The debates are when you win or lose. And right now, Charlie, I just can't imagine a worse state than the Democratic Party prepared for a debate against this man. You know Donald Trump better than many, many people on earth. You are as close as family to him. I've heard him refer to you as a son he never had, even though he has two awesome sons. But he refers to you, three awesome sons. He refers to you as like a child, the Trump child. You're close to him. What is the president doing to prepare for these debates? What is the president thinking about the GOP convention? And how is he going to crystallize in this last 75 days, like the message, which has very much been back and forth, you know?
One thing I know about the president that I have learned is, unlike other people, he embraces the most difficult moments. He's actually at his best. There's very few human beings that actually look forward to the triple overtime, game seven of the NBA finals, give me the ball, right? Most people aren't wired that way, actually. Most people are wired the opposite. Most people are like, I hope it doesn't go to overtime. Okay, somebody else did it. Thank goodness. Let's go celebrate. It's almost like Could you imagine, Benny, any other circumstance with someone like the president where he every single time he steps up when the pressure is on him, whether it be a State of the Union address, whether it be notifying the nation throughout the, I mean, he always steps up. He always has. And this was the big question right in the debates back in 2016, which was how would Trump prep for the debates? And he just slaughtered Hillary Clinton, right? It wasn't even close, especially. And he did it in such a way where he was impromptu and he was just really, really good on his feet. And Hillary looked so pre-rehearsed and Trump just looked magnanimous. I mean, you could use sports analogies. I love sports. I miss sports. I miss when sports weren't, you know, kowtowing to insurrectionist organizations in our country. But, you know, some of the great athletes are so similar to this. Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, where they're like, give me the ball. I'm going to step up. I'm going to perform. And President Trump is no different than that. President Trump almost, he wants that moment. In some ways, it wouldn't be like poetically correct if Trump was up like 15 points in the polls right now. Like, of course he has to be down. Of course the guy that never was supposed to be win, had an unbelievably successful presidency, got spied on, had a whole coup against him, had a special investigation that found nothing, that had his own party go against him. He endorsed the former presidential candidate of his own party only to see him go to the Senate and then tell him that he's awful and vote to impeach him. He gets impeached, overcomes the impeachment. Then our number one geopolitical foe comes and sends a virus from halfway around the world and shuts down everything. Our economy kills 160,000 Americans. And despite all that, you're trying to tell me the president's still within the margin of error? Of course, because that it makes perfect sense, because everything about this entire presidency is there's something different about this. Right. And so what he's doing to prepare is, first of all, He has great instincts. He's consuming information really well. Unlike Joe Biden, he's not sheltering in place. He's traveling. I'm of the opinion that for President Trump, movement is life. I actually think that the more he travels, the more he meets with people, the more phone calls he makes, the more energy and the sharper that he gets, right? Unlike Biden, that would actually make him basically incapacitated, right? So President Trump can go to Wisconsin, the very state that the convention's supposed to be held. And the same week he goes to Arizona, Iowa, and Minnesota, where Joe Biden does not leave the entire, you know, area of Wilmington, Delaware. That should tell you quite a lot. And so you put all that together, the president lives for moments like this. His entire life has built up to these next 75 days, right? And you can kind of see he's entered what I call like victory mode. Right. There's like a whole nother level of intensity that he's entered lately where he walks in and every word, every conversation is all about victory. Right. And we know this in politics. The person who is more focused is more likely to have breakthrough moments and less likely to make success, make mistakes, not just focused, but just has that kind of winning attitude. I mean, if you kind of go back in 2012 and 2008, Obama walked around with some swagger, right? I mean, I'm not an Obama fan. I think he's one of the worst presidents in American history. But when he walked in, he was like, that guy's probably going to win. Like Mitt Romney walked in and he was kind of like always, he felt like a CEO that was apologizing to people because he shipped their jobs overseas, right? Like every meeting Mitt Romney walked into was like he was apologizing. He's just shut down your factory.
John McCain.
I mean, he did. And he deserved to apologize, but yes.
That's exactly why, right? That's like his whole theme. Like every time he talked to public gatherings, it was just, I'm sorry to you 600 individuals I've shipped your jobs to, you know, Indonesia or to China. And so to answer the question, Benny, this is an opportunity that the president is going to step up heroically. I really believe that. And I know this. Like I travel the country. I've been to Michigan, Florida, North Carolina, Arizona, Colorado. I've been to Montana, Wyoming, Maine, just in the last 2 weeks, right? I'm still traveling despite all this nonsense. I'm talking to more swing voters than any other person, probably person to person, right? And I could tell you right now, people are just not just demanding, but they need next week. Like they need it. Like if the Republicans do their job, whatever enthusiasm is right now, like if you're talking about the gap between enthusiasm, Grand Canyon to Mars, like the furthest popular, like, furthest planet you can imagine, right? Just Pluto, Saturn, whatever. That's where we're going to be, right? Because the American people right now have been so beaten down and so depressed by the activist media, by the barrage of understandable bad news, by losing loved ones, which a lot of us have had to live through, my bad economic news, that actually people want to celebrate their country again, right? They don't want to have a nonstop infomercial of every single grievance, you know, industry. And Benny, one other thing I wanted to mention, I felt like tonight was the oppression Olympics. It was kind of like a competition of like, who is the most oppressed victim group? Like what is, and grievance politics is actually inherently really nasty because eventually those groups will turn against each other, right? And so I think that answers the question.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's so much a moment that we need. And you're exactly right. I mean, it really is something that we're all hoping for as conservatives, as Republicans, that the RNC is able to pull this off. And
I think they will.
We will see. We will see. You know the president better than many on the planet in the 1% of the 1%. What is he doing to prepare to debate Joe Biden?
Well, I think just being, himself is what you have to do to debate. And look, I know this I don't know this from being intimately around him, but I know this from people around him. He consumes information. He loves asking questions. There's an issue he doesn't understand. He's going to grill people. He's going to know his numbers. He's going to know his stats. He's going to know Biden's vulnerabilities, and he's going to be locked in. And I'm of the opinion, I've counseled this privately and publicly, I think the president should demand for in-person debates, demand for them. No Zoom calls, no Skype, none of that nonsense. And then if Joe Biden says no, then send Marine One and say, we are going to do this at Camp David. You know Camp David, it is secure. We'll do testing beforehand. We are doing it in person. And I get 20 guests, you get 20 guests. We'll do it with a debate audience. The audience doesn't mean that much, to be honest with you, Benny. The audience is usually not engaging. I actually do think the best debate that Trump had, though, was the second debate back in 2016, where he actually interacted with the audience. But even if there's no audience, they have to be in the same room together. They have to, Benny. You see frail Joe Biden that will not be able to be fed answers or have little pieces of paper. We need to know exactly how they interact when the lights are on. Because you know why? When President Trump renegotiated against Xi Jinping, that's like a debate. When President Trump was harsh on the Iranian regime, that's like a debate. When Joe Biden sent his son on Air Force Two, that was like a debate. What I mean by that? They fold under pressure. They don't do well when adversaries confront them. So I want to see what Joe Biden is. And this is the argument that I think the White House has to make and the campaign has to make, that debates matter. They don't just matter for obvious reasons of collision of ideas, but they matter also between, like, who do you want actually representing the renegotiation of these treaties, right? Like, who do you want to represent the geopolitical, landscape? And President Trump's done a phenomenal job. I mean, I think that part of next week needs to be talking about his foreign policy accomplishments. It's been unbelievable. And if we're honest with ourselves, that's actually the top, sworn duty of the commander in chief.
Charlie, what is the question that you would ask? I know we're coming up on an hour here, but what is the question that you would ask Joe Biden? Like, what would be the stump question? So if you were in the debate prep room, and obviously the president's very good on his feet, right? Because you'd be in jail. He's great on his feet. That wasn't rehearsed, obviously. Like, he was able to really, like, hammer Hillary on all these, like, these catch-a moments. And then she just stood there. He said, because you'd be in jail, and she just goes like this.
I know.
Right? And then
Bill Clinton was like, her, not me, please. Like, take her.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Ghislaine Maxwell. I gotta call you for something. What is the thing? What is the question that you would throw at Joe as a dart, as a tomahawk, like as a tomahawk to the heart? What is the question?
Well, so I'll start with kind of like the easy question. I love the way you're looking at this. Is the president should cross-examine Joe Biden, not the other way around, right? So I think he should say, Joe Biden, you were vice president for 8 years. You're in Washington, D.C. for 40. I did more in 3 years than you did in 40. Why? Right? All of a sudden, you framed the entire conversation where they have to kind of fight uphill a little bit. And then I also think that there has to be, and I'd have to think more about this, but I think there has to be the correct framing of the question, which is like, it could backfire. It could backfire if you bring Hunter too much into it, to be honest with you, because Joe could get really mad about, Bo Biden, understandable death and tragedy. But I think that you have to find the right issue and the right thing where I think this is a good one. It's like, Joe Biden, do you think people are not black if they don't vote for you? Like just something like that. Just set in kind of that de-escalatory tone, right? Where it's not do you think that people aren't black if they don't vote for you? And you just kind of like, right? And it's just like, and the cool thing about a debate is that the moderator actually becomes increasingly irrelevant when Donald Trump walks in. Because he's for most of these kind of activist media apparatchiks, Donald Trump's very intimidating, right? You meet him, he's 6'3". He's very, very powerful, right? When he walks in, he's, and so he'll just be like, screw you, moderator. Joe, I'm going to ask you a question. Do you think that black people are black if they don't vote for you? Like, that is a perfect question to ask, right? It's just right on the money. And so something like that. But I think that, look, here's the challenge that Trump will run into the debate. And I think that he has to be prepared for this, is that there is going to be kind of the short circuiting moment for Joe Biden, where he just kind of is unable to answer the question. And then Donald Trump has to not go for the kill. Instead, it has to just be the small push over the cliff, right? It has to be, it can't be like, told you so, totally weak, has Alzheimer's, dementia, diagnosed him, can't do that, right? Instead, it has to be like something like almost, I think we all know exactly what's going on right now. Like, boom, something like that, right? Versus just that kind of, or else it's going to look like beating up on the weak, right?
Weirdly, we all have this sympathy for the helpless. My newborn, right? It's like you have sympathy. You're like, you love the baby because the baby just can't exist without you and needs
and no one wants
love and care.
No one wants to vote for like
right.
a predator, right?
And with Joe, it's like you just have sympathy for him. You watch him last night. Did you see the thing with Jill Biden last night? Jill Biden gives this very nice speech until Joe comes in. Like, she gives a perfectly fine speech and she ends it and it's good. And Joe comes wobbling in there. He ties, first off, he ties her hand around his mask. His mask gets all tangled in his hand. So he like yanks her hand behind her with his filthy, disgusting Joe like Mensa mask. And then he like says his name wrong. He says, I'm Joe Biden's husband. Can't get that right. And then he says she has a backbone like a ramrod, which is super weird. And then he said that like, it's a weird thing to say about your wife. At least he didn't bite her finger, which he's prone to do in front of everyone. But because he did literally bite and lick his wife's finger on national TV. And then he confused his wife with his sister. And then he said his sister is his love of his life. He's also done that. But then ultimately, like, he like made some weird allegory to like, she's like the homeroom teacher you never had. And even Jill is just like, Get out of here. And he's going to do that. You're right. He's going to have these senior moments. Charlie, tell me if you think this is a good idea. If I were Donald Trump, I would start by saying, we have a crisis in this country. There are millions of people who are suffering right now because of something called leftist violence. Joe Biden, does Antifa exist?
Yes, that's exactly right.
And I'll tell you what, Charlie, if I were to guess, what would happen? Joe Biden wouldn't know what Antifa is.
I think
that Joe Biden would say, what?
Minnesota, new poll came in, Benny. 47 Trump, 47% Biden. Tied. Why do you think that is? Maybe because the entire inner city of Minneapolis is burning down.
Well, yes, correct. Yeah. I mean, I'm from the Midwest. You're from the Midwest. Minnesota's always been a corkball state in the Midwest. We don't really like Minnesota, you know, as a fellow Midwesterners, we'd like to. It's like the creepy.
Last time.
Yeah. But honestly, like Minnesota still has the same type of Midwestern sensibilities that the rest of us have. And it's just gone insane.
Mm-hmm.
If I were in Chicago, as you are right now, I'd say the same thing. Like,
we have another question. We have another question right here. Even if Donald Trump is elected, it will not stop the leftist takeover forever. How can we make sure the Democrats and the left are less radicals out in the event they take power? They will not permanently destroy America as we know it.
Well, I know you know the answer to this, but before I let you answer much better than me and smarter than me, I'll take my low IQ answer of this. The low IQ answer of this is England. And England is a wonderful example of the conservative party so putting the left in a box. Like the leftist party in England has been the Labour Party, as it's called, has been utterly taken over by radical, vicious, venomous AOC style anti-Semites. Jeremy Corbyn and AOC are best friends. They call each other. They love each other. They have a good time. They have a great relationship. They love talking about how Israel needs to be destroyed and wiped off the face of the earth and how they need to take away all private capital and all private property. They love each other. And Labour won how many seats in the last election? I mean, it's like 300
to 100. Massive landslide. And by the way,
none of the polling reflected that going into it.
No. And so what happened is over the course of the radical leftist metastasizing through the host, that is the corpse of the Democratic Party, that is now the host for this, you know, essentially Leninist, Maoist, Marxist takeover. You just let them do it, right? You let them fail. And then you take this next 4 years of Trump wins and you marginalize and crush them into this little ball, this little tinfoil ball.
I was going to say, no, you're right, Benny. I mean, my take on this is the only way to treat these people is to defeat them. You have to achieve victory. Like, there is no other. You have to beat them in the ballot box. You have to beat them in conversation. You have to beat them in culture. You have to beat them in video. All those sorts of things. Beat them on social media. All these sorts of things. And if you
beat them in video. Yeah.
Right?
Talk my language.
Yeah. And if we don't, and the failure to do so is they will run us all over, right? And they will not stop unless they are stopped. That's the, that is the biggest takeaway, right? They will not, the only way, if we can demoralize them, I have a different theory than most people, right? So some people, Benny, I want your opinion on this. Some people say, well, if Trump wins, the country is going to blow up, all these sorts of things. I think there might be like an instant revolt, right? I think there might, but we've already saw some pretty big insurrection. I'm actually of the opinion, Benny, if he wins, they'll be very demoralized. Like they will be, I mean, I think it'll be a death blow, like the likes of which we've never seen before.
Yes. I mean, think of like, do you remember the no meme? The best thing, no, like Donald Trump's inauguration. Like,
yes.
think of that, but think of that, but like Thanos's army in, you know, the Avengers Infinity War, like just these, like this, like field of no, like this is like what it will be. But here's my take, Charlie, and you have the questions. I don't. So tell me if I, you know, my take is this very simply. Kavanaugh, you brought up Kavanaugh a little bit ago. Kavanaugh was a perfect example of how they can't help themselves. They're going to lose. They can't help themselves. They go too extreme. They get this taste in the water, this bloodlust in the water, and they can't help themselves. The left can't help themselves. They're such committed Marxists that they don't know when to stop. And so with Kavanaugh, they just didn't know when to stop, and they lost the Senate because of it. The Democrats were going to win the Senate, and it would have been a really rough time for Donald Trump. He would have spent the entire last 2 years vetoing everything. Veto. It would have been exhausting. Instead, they, you know, because of Kavanaugh, the GOP was able to pull it out in spite of themselves, obviously, and you and I have thoughts on that. What the left is doing right now, burning down cities, like absolute fractured America, post-American politics. The American public's sick of it. They're going to spit it out.
I think the framing of post-American politics is a great way to put it. Last question here, Benny, and we're getting at freedom@charliekirk.com. For those of you that are watching on YouTube, I will give away 5 signed copies of the New York Times bestseller MAGA Doctrine. If you show you're subscribed with the bell and email it to us at freedom@charliekirk.com to screenshot and email us. Last question here, Benny. What do you think the October surprise will be? Or what do you think it should be? What do you think we could force the hand for the October surprise? Last time, it was James Comey and the Billy Bush tape, believe it or not. And despite that, Donald Trump overcame it. Remember, his campaign was given a eulogy almost a couple weeks before by the media. And that's why I tell people we're in a better place now than we were in 16. I'm like, hold on a second. You remember the Democrat convention where we were getting in fights with the Gold Star Father? You remember the Democrat convention where like they were united and we had like fights on the floor of who we were going to nominate? And then all of a sudden we had the Billy Bush tape and we overcame that. What do you think the October surprise is, or what do you think it could be or should be?
There are things I can say and things I can't say. So the things I can say, are, I believe that there is going to be huge indictments that are going to come down in Obamagate and Spygate and Russiagate. I believe that that is going to be laid bare, and some of the highest levels of our government, probably pre-debate, are going to have to answer for that. Obviously, Joe Biden's name is on a lot of unmaskings, and I think that's part of the reason why Susan Rice wasn't selected as vice president. Susan Rice, I personally believe, would have made a killer vice president for Joe Biden, and I believe that is one of the reasons. They know that they are caught red-handed in all of this, and I believe the public, when you can finally focus on it, and when people start getting perp walked in and out of court for it, I think that the water will boil so heavily that the establishment media will have to cover it, and people will have to see. And the corruption, the weird part about Joe Biden being selected by the DNC as the candidate, the weird part about that is that he is complicit, at least, at worst. You know, at best, he's complicit, right? He was just there to go along. He didn't quite know what was happening. At worst, he was one of the people masterminding it, one of the people suggesting that this is the way they go after Flynn. This is the way they go after these people. He's using his 40 years in Washington to figure out how to corrupt the system. And so that's what I personally believe the surprise is going to be that. I think there are some other really special things in the works. And I think there's some other really big things that can happen between now and then. If you know one thing about Donald Trump, it's that he doesn't like to be caught without a card up his sleeve. And he's got a full deck.
We'll have to watch and see. Benny, thank you so much for watching. Everyone, email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. And we will be streaming live right after Joe Biden accepts the nomination tomorrow with instant analysis and reaction. Thank you guys so much. Thanks, Benny.
Thanks, guys.
What a great conversation that was with Benny Johnson. If you guys want to get involved with Turning Point USA, take out your phone right now. Go to tpusa.com, tpusa.com. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Type in Charlie Kirk Show, your podcast provider. Hit that subscribe button and give us a 5-star review. Please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support, charliekirk.com/support, and go to charliekirk.com for upcoming appearances. I will be at Pastor Rob McCoy's church this Sunday in Thousand Oaks, California. If you guys want to get tickets for that, because it's a very tightly ticketed event, go to charliekirk.com or email me freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. God bless.